Good evening, everybody. My name is Suresh Appavu. I'm the Dean for Diversity and Equity at Dominican. So on behalf of the Diversity Action Group, I welcome you to the 2019 Unity and Diversity Annual Keynote Address. Thank you for attending this important event. To begin with, what I would like to do is to request the members of the Diversity Action Group to stand up, please. I just want people to acknowledge the hard work that they did to put this together. Nothing happens without many hands, and so please give them a round of applause. And they've been key in getting a whole month of events that have occurred over the last 2 to 3 weeks and will culminate May 2nd. I also want to acknowledge Dr. Pitchford, the Vice President for Academic Affairs and the Dean of Faculty who is present, and Dr. Mojgan Behman, the Dean of General Studies who is present, and other luminaries who are also here to support this event today. And I have to give a special shout out to Stuart, who has been very kind to do the broadcast via Dominican Radio. So this is going out live. So please give Stuart a round of applause. For our university, this is one of the great services that Stuart provides, which really brings many of the much of the content that we generate from various speakers and so on who we bring here today and gives them an above average exposure to a lot of different Bay Area communities. So thank you, Stuart. I also want to say that there will be a question and answer session post Glory's keynote address. So please do write down questions or things that you might want comment on for that particular time period. And let me then go ahead and introduce our speaker for this evening. So Glory Adim is the founder of Well-Read Black Girl, a Brooklyn-based book club and online community that celebrates the uniqueness of black literature and sisterhood. In fall 2017, she organized the first ever Well-Read Black Girl Literary Festival. She has worked as a creative strategist for over 10 years at startups and cultural institutions, including Kickstarter, the Webby Awards, and the New York Foundation for the Arts. She received the 2017 Innovators Award from the Los Angeles Times Book Prizes for her work as a literary advocate. Her first anthology, Well-Read Black Girl, Finding Our Stories, Discovering Ourselves, was published by Random House in 2018. She serves on the board of New York City's Housing Works Bookstore and lives in Brooklyn, New York. Please give a warm Dominican University welcome to Glory Adim.
Thank you, Dr. Appavu. I'm really appreciative of that wonderful introduction. Thank you for everyone for being here. Today is such a beautiful day, and I feel honored to be able to speak to you all and to be part of the Unity and Diversity Month, and to acknowledge the Office of Diversity and Equity and the Diversity in Action Group. You guys have done an incredible job this entire month, and I'm honored to be able to speak to you about my individual experience and what led me to become a community organizer, write the book that just came out last October, the Well-Read Black Girl Anthology, and really dedicate my work and my mission to amplify the voices of others. So I always like to start off with just definitions. What do we call ourselves? What do I consider myself? And I consider myself many things: an activist, a storyteller, a feminist, a community organizer. And ever since launching Well-Read Black Girl in 2015, I have used storytelling to really fuel my passion and to connect with others. And it's been really phenomenal to turn my love of reading into a career of activism. I think back to when I discovered my voice, and I think there's always a moment in everyone's life to when you think, like, this is the moment where everything changed, or I really started to see my trajectory or form my worldview. And for me, that was actually in high school. I had a really incredible teacher, my English teacher, Mr. Burns, who taught me to be still when I was uncertain and to listen and to read. He was the one that really instilled this idea of being with myself and being able to form my own opinions. And anyone that would talk to Mr. Burns or took his class, like, he was legendary. He is still a great friend. And that moment, taking his class in the 10th grade, really changed everything for me. And he was the one that introduced me to many of the greats: Maya Angelou, Walt Whitman, Joan Didion, Toni Morrison. And I would go home and I would read the titles that Mr. Burns assigned, sometimes in class, or sometimes he would pull me to the side and say, "Glory, I think you'll like this. Go, you know, check this out. It's not on, you know, it's not part of class, but read it on your own and tell me what you think." And I would go home at night and I would read Morrison's The Bluest Eye or Beloved, and I would come into class the next day and I would ask him questions, because a lot of times I didn't understand the plots and the themes, and I would say, "Mr. Burns, what does this mean?" And it became almost like our little ritual. I would read something and I would come back the next morning and I'd ask him questions, and it continued that way. And he would talk to me like an adult. I was in the 10th grade, but he would really connect with me as an individual, and I could always tell that he valued what I was saying. Even when it was confusing and, you know, filled with like teenage angst, he listened. And I began to really appreciate those conversations, because I really remember it as a clear definition of how I was building my worldview, but also how I was building a bridge with the world. I saw my future really starting to take shape in those conversations. And that for me was the moment, outside of like my family, my parents, and in some ways your parents have to listen to all the things you're saying and they have to give you that kind of extra boost of encouragement, but Mr. Burns was the person that made me have a greater appreciation for literature, and it helped my writing flourish. When I graduated from high school, Mr. Burns gave all the seniors a personalized letter, and I'm going to share that with you now, because it actually is now one of my prized possessions. It's something that I continuously go back to and think about, okay, this was the moment that I found clarity in myself. And so here it is. I graduated in the year 2000. Glory. Just a brief note to congratulate you on all of your success, major and minor, and to thank you for giving me so many opportunities to work with you. All headaches aside, I consider myself blessed. You have survived much of your time here. Without question, you have emerged on the other side a stronger woman. This, more than any sort of academic validation, is a signal that your success out there is coming. Of course, nothing is easy. But then, Wakefield does a pretty good job of imparting that lesson. You have acquired and enhanced and learned some pretty necessary skills in here. Most important among them are a sense of purpose, knowledge of quality, and an ability to relate to nearly everybody. The rest of the stuff will fall into place, with a lot of hard work, of course. I look forward to seeing your name in lights. There is a wonderful world out there ready to be painted. You certainly possess a skilled brush or two and a colorful palette. Please keep me updated on any and all Glory events and successes. You will certainly be close enough to visit every once in a while. I know I speak for Wakefield in saying we will miss you. All the best, worlds of wonder and success, Mr. Burns. Mr. Burns, he was the beginning. And there's always a beginning, a person who touches your life and makes you feel seen, affirmed, and valued, whether that's in high school or college or a coach you have. There's always a person in your life that pours into you, that serves as a mirror that says, you can do this, you have the ability, and let me help inspire you and lead you in the right direction. He taught me to question, and he taught me to investigate. And for those who want to pursue a career in social justice but aren't sure how to get started, it really begins with your own story. Don't be afraid to acknowledge your strengths and continue to build on them. Let go of self-doubt and build bridges in your own community. I often do this thing in the book club where I tell everyone to turn to their neighbor and introduce themselves and say hello. I won't put you guys through that right now, but that really is the beginning of everything, turning to your neighbor and saying hello, learning what their story is. Why did they enter this place? Why did they go to this university? Why did they come to this country? It often begins with that question. There are people right next to you that can help you develop strategies that will help you reimagine the political, social, and economic alternatives needed at the local, state, and federal level. With everything happening in the world, especially in the political landscape, it's necessary for us to turn to our neighbors more, to question, and to see how we can help one another. Coming out of the 2016 election, there are two things that really came clear to me. One, marginalized communities, and when I say that, I mean Black, Latino, Asian American, all deserve to have vehicles that represent the breadth of their interest. Two, we need to do a better job of being able to communicate what conditions and experiences our communities are facing. That work begins with our individual stories. Discuss your experience with police violence or with inadequate healthcare. Share your story as an immigrant or with incarceration. Tell the joys and tell the triumphs, but also the challenges. Find stories that help capture who you are as a person and that capture the diversity of your experience. In the Well Read Black Girl anthology, the question that I asked every contributor was, when did you first see yourself in literature? What was the moment that was defining and helped change you and help you feel more comfortable as a person? And those individuals that I talked to, they ranged from poet laureates to Pulitzer Prize winning playwrights like Lynn Nottage, women that had massive accomplishments. But they all said the same thing, that they started humbly in the beginning, just grabbing a pen and paper and writing everything down, and not being afraid of their failures, not sitting too much in regret, but moving forward and looking for a way to build connectivity. And that really inspired me to tell more of my own story and share about my upbringing. So I stand before you as a daughter, as a caretaker, as a first generation. Both my parents are Nigerian, and all of those identities influence how I move and how I interact with the world. When I'm thinking of building bridges, I am also really thinking about how these bridges can be so powerful and so uniting that there's almost nothing that can stop them. There are no impossible barriers. And I think that can be done in a lot of different ways. But it really relies on the individual and what they're willing to, how far they're willing to push themselves and how far you're willing to push your own individual resilience. And I think that can be done in many ways. When I think of my own lived experience, I've done a lot of things, whether it's writing or actually participating myself in different activism, whether I'm protesting or, you know, writing an op-ed, something that really fires me up and I want to make sure that everyone knows and it has visibility. I'm really just trying to find ways to push those barriers in a visible way that is powerful. And as individuals, whether you are protesting policies that are unconstitutional, like the Muslim ban, or attending police violence demonstrations, or writing about them in your local paper, what you are doing and what I try to do every day is bear witness as a citizen. Whether you're a journalist or a reporter or someone tweeting about it on social media, you are bearing witness. And you're making sure that true stories get out there and other people know what's happening. You can't stay silent. I have friends who even serve as translators. When people are being detained, their goal is to make sure that other people have access and that people can understand what they're saying. They're helping communicate between different sides. And I think that's the responsibility that we all have, is how can we build more bridges, and communicate, whether that means we disagree and there's discourse or we're in the same dialogue. It's about that communication that is so key. Right now, it feels, when I look out into the world and when I'm on social media at times, it feels like everyone's in this silo. And I think it's so important to get out of those spaces where you feel like you're only talking to the same people that sound like you and look like you, and actually have face-to-face contact, not only social media, but real contact with individuals that have different opinions than you. And being able to communicate why the things that you are doing can be destructive or actually supportive and helpful. What are those things? When I find myself next to a person who has different opinions than me, what happens is I start to articulate and sharpen my own perspective, and it helps me see, okay, this is what I'm up against, and this is how I need to have patience with others and be able to build fortitude and practice courage on a daily basis. Because what that takes is courage. When you're out there in the world and you feel that your voice isn't being heard or understood, you have to keep going. There's no quitting. There's one of my favorite quotes that my beloved professor introduced to me was from Audre Lorde. When I dare to be powerful, to use my strength in service of my vision, then it becomes less and less important whether I'm afraid. And I have to be honest, there are a lot of things that I'm afraid of. Even sometimes getting in front of you and giving a speech, there's nervousness, there's anxiety, because you want your words to have impact and you want them to sit with the person in a way where hopefully it makes a difference. But the fear can't stop you. I don't stop doing the things that I want to do simply because I'm afraid. I just try to put them in practice and practice courage and resilience. I've made a list of things that I've learned from reading Audre Lorde throughout the years. When I graduated college in 2004, I took a trip back to see my dad who lived in Nigeria, and I stayed there for a year. It was my attempt of writing the great American novel. I was sitting there and my dad was like, go to grad school. But I went back and I tried to write my first book. But what really happened was I read a lot of Audre Lorde, Sister Insider, all of her poems, Zambi. I just went through all of her work and started to really study her work with a more critical lens and trying to figure out how I could apply that to my life. At that time, I had not created Well-Read Black Girl, and it wasn't even a thought in my head yet, but I was obsessed with her activism and just her fierceness as a black feminist poet and warrior and activist. And I thought if I could be just a little more like her, a little bolder, braver, I could make an impact in the world. And I tried to pour all that energy into my journal, and I ended up having almost a list of things that I found were just necessary if you wanted to have a life dedicated to social justice and activism. And the first was to talk to people who are different from you about their experiences and points of view, no matter how much you anticipate disagreement. Lorde often wrote about the importance of confronting fear and immersing oneself in a belief systems that are different than one's own. It's a practical way to confront fear. And those fears typically lead to an awakening of yourself and an inner dialogue with yourself. And that inner dialogue allows you to go into the world and talk to others and make an impact. You have to be able to recognize the other identities that are intersecting every day in the world, and intersecting with feminism as well. And when you recognize something unjust is happening, you have to say something. And I think that goes back to telling your story. When you see things that are just completely inhumane, you must challenge yourself not to sit in fear and speak out against it. As an activist, Audre Lorde was the queen, absolute queen, of not only having her voice heard, but emphasizing that silence leads to danger being complicit. And that is just not saying anything is just as bad as inaction. It's not enough to just recognize the injustice, but it has to be spoken out against. And whatever your medium is, again, writing it down, sharing it on social media, actually attending protests, being engaged with the work is necessary. Silence, more now more than ever, is not an option. And I think this is also incredibly important, but this is definitely a proponent from Audrey's work. Write about your feelings. Tell people what you care about, what you're passionate about. The reason I have had success so far is that I try to bring forth my enthusiasm in everything I do. I try to show people my passion and what I care about. I inject that in every single moment. Whether I'm writing in my book or going out to speaking to individuals, I want people to see what I'm excited about and what I care about. Lord once wrote, "Our feelings are our most genuine paths to knowledge." Furthermore, she also wrote that self-care is not self-indulgent, but rather self-preservation. There's a lot of talk about self-care, and there's this conflation between, you know, face masks and bubble baths, and that's not it. It is self-preservation. We as individuals are up against great, great struggle when it comes to our political identities. It's challenging, and we need to be able to practice self-care and self-preservation in a powerful way. As an activist and writer, Lord was always, always recognizing the importance as oneself as a whole individual. Despite having many parts and many identities, you're still a whole person that needs to be taken care of. The personal is political. That is another quote that I adhere to from Audre Lorde that I know has lived and been a strand through my life. Although Well Read Black Girl started as a book club and a space to amplify the voices of Black women in literature, it has now evolved into a space where we are focused on civic issues. One in particular is working with women who've been incarcerated, helping them find ways to build lives when they are released, looking at Black mothers and maternity, making sure they have access to adequate health care. It's grown beyond just simply holding a book and sharing our feelings around the characters and the plot, but it's become a movement where we're looking to one another and trying to find ways to encourage voting, you know, stop food deserts, finding ways where we can all connect around our individual stories and make an impact in our communities, particularly our local communities, because I think that's where everything starts. When you are next to your neighbor, talking to them and trying to figure out how to help one another. We can't compartmentalize our identities and our experiences. They're just one way that we connect with people. And although we're all sharing different ideas, I think it has to be known that we have to challenge ourselves to think outside of our own experiences. With my community, it's easy to say, well, you're all Black women, you all like relate in the same way. But that's not true. Blackness is not a monolith. There's so much duality in our experiences. There's women who are from the Caribbean who have stories to tell. There's women who are not able-bodied who share their stories. There are queer women in the group. It's all about sharing our individual acts of kindness, but also our stories within that. You should never look at a person and think you know what their story is. It's not that easy. When it comes to feminism or anything else, really, it really is looking outside of your own experience and looking towards identities that you can build and grow with. I think one thing I'm really trying to put in practice in 2019 is not placing blame or voicing bitter criticisms about more privileged people in my community or in the world, but helping others recognize their privilege and expressing that we are conditioned to see the differences we have with others and not alienating the other, but trying to get closer to it to understand it. Thinking as an invitation to be more inclusive, to be more tolerant, to be more understanding of different experiences. And within that, When you do practice that understanding and listening to others, you start to recognize that your understanding becomes more intersectional, and it will expand and grow. Because revolution is not a one-time event. It requires practice and going back to our beginnings continuously, going back to the things that we've learned as individuals. Try your best to check your privilege. I know it's hard to sometimes do that, but step outside of yourself and look at your privilege. As someone who's first generation, I can say I have the privilege to have a passport. You know, both my parents are Nigerian, and they don't have that privilege. They came to the United States in order to give me a better life. I recognize that, and I know that informs my identity. We have to notice when class or racial privilege may be affecting your understanding of what the world looks like. Try as much as possible to confront situations, conversations, relationships, people, books, and more things, quite honestly, that make you feel uncomfortable, that make you feel uncertain. Because in that uncertainty, you start to really investigate yourself and how that appears in the world and how your individual bias might be affecting the things that you're doing, whether that's in a social setting or political. You have to check your privilege. And it's something that I constantly have to remind myself when it comes to the work that I'm doing. I can't assume that anyone's experience or background is the same as mine. Another quote that I live by and is on my sticky, my like vision board at home is, "What if we respected our fear as a sign to ourselves that we wanted to learn more?" That's a question that we should all ask ourselves. What if we respected our fear as a sign to ourselves that we wanted to learn more? Change is often small. Sometimes it trickles in. So when we get to see the change happen in a real and concrete way, it can be jarring sometimes, but we're constantly changing. Change is motion. That's like what we're meant to do. We're meant to change and grow and learn more about our individual selves. It's the kind of thing that makes you want to cry sometimes. It makes you want to jump for joy. It makes you want to reconsider the things that you've done in the world. You have to be yearning for change and learning about yourself all the time. Speaking on change, on race, on our country's history is not easy. For many of us, it's hard to really calmly lay out the facts that our society is changing rapidly. Sometimes we are holding back judgment. Sometimes we're holding back shame. But if we're all working from a space where we want to evoke fairness, from a space of love and kindness, I think that's what makes the change, it makes it worthwhile. I often think about the traits that I've had to learn and adapt over the years in order to be a stronger community organizer. And there are certain things that one must put in practice if they want to do any kind of activism work in the world. And I think that these are a few things, along with all my readings, whether it's Morrison or Audre Lorde or Maya Angelou, they all have this common thread of being curious and being open to new ideas and willing to ask questions. That's definitely the first thing that comes to mind. As an individual, I pride myself on being a curious person that is constantly asking questions and looking for ways to change my perspective or learn more about the other person's perspective. Another thing that has to happen as an activist or you're trying to propel yourself into a world of social activism is honesty. Being honest and direct and willing to speak the truth in whatever industry that you decide to move into will lead you to have the best impact in the world. And being vulnerable as well. And when I think of the word vulnerable, it's sometimes people think that it's only showing emotion and pouring yourself out there, like showing the pain of your experience. But true vulnerability really is being aware of your own limitations and also understanding the fact that you need to be authentic in that. And when you're authentic with others, when they're next to you, when you're online, that is what like really starts to build more substantial and meaningful relationships. That vulnerability and honesty is what people are attracted to. They want to see themselves in your experiences. They want to tell their own lived experiences. And you can't, that's in every book that I've read, like you can't fake that. That's like a real thing when you're trying to connect with others. You have to be willing to put yourself out there, because otherwise the facade or the performative acts, they catch up with you. They don't last. You can only do an act for so long until the truth comes out. And that's the, you know, the old saying, the truth will set you free. The truth is really what people want to connect with and grow with. I also, as I said before, I really do believe, along with truth and honesty and vulnerability, in that mix, it's being brave. And I think individuals have to practice bravery and courage every day. It's being willing to step into situations that are challenging and that require courage and sometimes require sacrifice. I've definitely been in spaces where I don't know what the outcome will be, but I do know that I want to connect with the individuals that I'm sharing the space with, and I want to make sure their voices are heard, so it requires sacrifice on my part as well. Another part of that is just a sense of resourcefulness. I have been working with so many different community organizers over the years that resourceful isn't even a big enough word, because they find ways to get things done and to follow through and execute with little resources. And I think that level of just commitment, whether you have, you know, financial security or emotional security, because within all this work, there's also emotional labor that is tied in, that you still find ways to get what you need to have done. And being able to get big things done with limited resources is a skill. I think most people, they're not activists that I see in the community, they're doing great work, and some at times they don't have the support that they need. And as my platform grows and I have more visibility, I'm constantly looking for ways to connect people with more resources. It's definitely a mandate that I have, that if you are going to join this community, the goal is to be resourceful and to support others that are in need of help. And then everything within that is about being collaborative. How can we work together to achieve a bigger goal? How can we challenge ourselves to be more compassionate, more kind, more open to learning new things? I always knew I would find a way to combine storytelling and social justice in my own way, but I wasn't sure how that would be, how it would come to fruition. I always knew that I wanted to make an impact within my community and talk to others. And I had to let go of the idea of my life looking one certain way. I had to be open to being unconventional and asking questions and finding my own space within the context of literature and storytelling and activism. And quite honestly, as I stand before you, I am still growing in that, and I'm still trying to figure that out, because it's all new and it's all forever changing. There's not one way to be an activist. There's only one way to be yourself. And when you go out into the world, you can only be yourself and be as passionate and enthusiastic and committed, because that's the essence of everything that like requires true impact, is being committed and dedicated to the cause. My cause is, again, to really help the voices of, you know, people of color, marginalized communities, the voices of Black women be heard. And that, no matter if it's a book or a film or any creative practice, I'm there to support. But then I'm also looking for ways to be civically involved and engaged in a way where we can come together on our platform to support political issues as well. It's all connected, and there's not one way to do this work. I just really encourage everyone to understand the power of the individual story and where that can lead you. I didn't know who I was going to become when I was a young person in Mr. Burns's class as a curious and vivacious student. I just knew that I wanted to make a difference. And I think a lot of individuals in the same spaces that you're in when you're in university and you're looking out into the world on what will I do to make a difference, it begins there. And I think that we have a lot of responsibility to ourselves and to our large community to be committed to that and to look for ways to make our voices louder. I think that with collective care and with just love and compassion for one another, that we can all make a difference in the world. And I think my story is evident of that, but every individual sitting here has that same feeling of just excitement and resilience, and they have the ability to do the same thing. I don't think that my work, I'm grateful for it, but it doesn't stand alone. It is part of a larger continuum of women and writers that have been doing this from the very beginning. And I'm trying to simply live in that lineage and build that resilience and make sure that other people have the same opportunities and they have a blueprint to live off of. This right now allows us to be in an intimate space and allows us to ask questions of one another. And I would like to invite you to ask me questions, but I'm also going to share a couple of questions with you too. So it'll be interactive.
Questions?
Yeah.
Hello, my name is Vanessa Gropetti.
Hi.
And my question for you is, being a woman and a person of color, what has been your biggest obstacle to get to where you are now, and how did you overcome that?
That's a great question. For me, my biggest obstacle for sure has been getting over imposter syndrome. I've had an opportunity to have incredible mentors that have really poured into me and given me the confidence and the ability to do the work that I want to do. But at times, I've sometimes been stuck on the idea of more credentials. I've been like, maybe I should go get my PhD. Maybe I should get a second master's. I've been thinking, like, how can I expand my own learning so much? And at times I have to take a step back and say, actually, you've done a lot of work and you have to be present in your accomplishments now and know that you have made a difference and you're not faking it. You have the full ability. And that takes a lot of practice and getting used to in terms of, especially as you get more accolades and your platforms develop, or you get more, just the popularity of things grow. But I always go back to my core list of questions and remembering that the work that I'm doing is really to shine a light on others and that I deserve to be here. And like my work and my life and my story is just as worthy. So I do a lot of positive self-talk and I look towards my mentors to really help me just stay balanced and clear on what I'm working towards. Because as an ambitious person, I'm sure like you seem like a very ambitious person, it's hard. Like sometimes you just continue, keep doing the work and you can forget to do the self-care or to step away from the computer sometimes and just take some time to say, like, this is possible and you are worthy of being here. So imposter syndrome definitely is something that I've had to overcome over the years. But as I get older and as I, like, just learn more about myself, it's become easier. Yeah.
My name is Raphael. Oh, sorry.
Hi.
Honestly, okay, anyways. So I guess my question would be, what progressive or political movement have you been involved in over the past, your life?
Yeah.
And what is one key thing you carry from it until basically now,
Yeah, I attended Howard University, which is a historically black college based in Washington, D.C. And during my time there, there was a huge case around affirmative action, which we all know that the folks that actually benefit more from affirmative action tend to be white women and not folks of color. And there was a moment when I was, before I graduated, that this statute was going to be overturned. And me and my friends were like, very much involved in like protesting and making sure that we were like on the steps of the Supreme Court when this was happening. And that was like a really turning milestone for me. And since then, I've been involved in different movements around Black Lives Matter, as well as Black health maternity. That's something that's been happening a lot right now, where the Black mothers are definitely underserved and overlooked in medical spaces. My mother's also a nurse, and so she actually worked in maternity units when I was growing up. So I saw that firsthand, but I didn't realize the discrepancies in terms of policies. And so that's something I've committed myself to, and we've been talking more about when it comes to our festivals, and we have like reading groups. There's a book by Dorothy Roberts called Killing the Black Body that I encourage everyone to read. And that was like one way that we addressed the idea of not only is this issue prevalent in maternity, but it's simply across the board whenever doctors or the healthcare system is interacting with the black body. So we were able to work with Dorothy Roberts when the book actually had its like 50th anniversary 2 years ago. And we held like several different like reading groups around the book. We had a conversation online with Dr. Roberts just to remember, allow people to remember this is not coming out of a vacuum. She is a professor and she just is so like profound. Like she has been doing this work since the 80s, right? So the work that I'm doing is always around bringing visibility and letting people know about the current issues, but having people understand the history of issues too. Like this is not just something that happened in 2019. It was happening in like 1989. It was happening in like 1969. We're all part of this continuum. So what those two things are the primary things that I've really kind of like set my mission to work around, simply because I have, as a black woman, I feel all these things. I'm not a mother, but I do just have a relation and empathy for just black women. And so that is like that's like the ground that it feels most fertile to me that I want to always work in. And then clearly, you know, within the presidential election, I've done my share of work with different groups, in particular Dream Defenders based out of Florida, and working with when Stacey Abrams was being elected, and wasn't elected, but we wanted her to win. I wanted her to win. But just looking for different political candidates that reflect my own personal ideology and helping like support their efforts, because my greatest strength thus far has been visibility. And so because I have like the platform on social media and I've been able to interact with people that that respect my curated work online, I'm using that to actually do groundwork. So if there's something that I feel like doesn't have enough attention to it, I'm doing my best to like bring it into the perspective of more audiences. So that's going to change the vote on things. It's going to create more funding. It's going to create just more education and make a greater impact. So those are the things that I'm like trying my best to put my energy behind.
Hi, Tara Spain. I'm a professor here in natural sciences and mathematics. I've always been an avid reader. I love science fiction and fantasy, and I was really excited to read Octavia Butler way back when. And so I think that, in my point of view at least, she seems to be one of the mothers of Afrofuturism.
Yes.
With some of the series that she wrote. And so I was wondering, have you been inspired by that as well? Do you read any science fiction and fantasy?
I do. I absolutely love Octavia Butler. I actually went to her archives in Pasadena at the Huntington Library. So I was able to visit that. And I think there is something that is so profound about Octavia Butler, because she is, you know, the foremother of reimagining what our futures look like and how within our own stories and our own like personal mantras we can manifest things. And I loved reading Parable of the Sower and Kindred. I just I'm completely in awe of her work, and I'm constantly looking for emerging writers that have that same kind of tenacity and thinking of new worlds. So I would definitely recommend River Solomon. She is a writer that wrote the book An Unkindness of Ghosts. And have you heard of that? It's absolutely fantastic. And I do not take it lightly when I'm saying she is definitely, you know, channeling Octavia Butler in her writing, because she's able to bring in the voices of being a queer, disabled writer. Like, she channels every part of her identity and puts it into her prose. So I definitely do read Octavia Butler and a lot of science fiction. N.K. Jemisin was one of the contributors in my anthology, and she wrote a completely beautiful essay about this idea of the continuum, connecting the past with the future, and how we have to remember the things of our history in order to move forward. And I think that's exactly what Butler does in her work. Like, she just imagines a whole new, and in a lot of ways, she's predicted the society we're living in now, if you really want to go there. She has predicted this idea of just of not being willing to be in discourse with others, and that leads to a dystopia of its own. But I definitely love Octavia Butler.
Hi, I'm Gabby. I'm a staff here at Dominican. My question is, most of my writing experience has been grad school, which is not as fun. How do you stay motivated to write a whole book?
Yeah.
The concept to me seems so challenging, as does like academic writing. So what do you do to stay motivated to finish?
For me, I have taken the work that I do is, this is basically the life that I always wanted to live, to have the freedom and autonomy to write and create my own schedule and explore things in a very open-ended way. A lot of times I walk into an archive and I don't know what that outcome will be, and I actually thrive in situations like that where it is a little bit amendable and you can just create your own world. But I think what has, you know, been my greatest gift and the greatest strength thus far is just being a creature of habit. So I write at the same time every day, even if it doesn't, maybe it's sometimes a little nonsensical and it's not as fun, but I make myself write every morning at the same time, and I make it less about like inspiration and just more about habit. That actually fuels me to do something every day, because then I look back and I'm like, oh, these were some great ideas that I had on Monday and that I didn't actually know were coming, you know. And then I kind of I tend to be more like self-determined and more of a creature of habit, and that helps me. And I also find inspiration in the work that I'm doing. I really do love like going into archives and like looking at the work of, you know, incredible writers of the past, and looking just for hidden histories and things that have not been discovered before. And that is like such a skill set that you have to sharpen, because it does feel like everything's online, right? It feels like everything is accessible, so you have to read closely and deeply to find something that hasn't been discovered. So you really have to find, you're looking for connections that aren't apparent, and it just makes it, I feel, for me at least, it helps me find connections that I know haven't been discovered before or discussed in a critical way, or like just moving on beyond the superficial. And as a grad student, I'm sure that like that you have relation to that, like you're constantly looking for themes and like structures that are deeper and have more meaning. And I think if you're able to do that and put that into practice every day, like it has its own kind of like reward in it, because at the end of the month, when I look at my journals or I look at my body of work, I start to see patterns and connections that I didn't see before. And that's really what motivates me, those like unknown patterns that I can, once I do have it clear in my mind, I'm excited to share that with the world. And right now my biggest platform is on Instagram, and that picture is just a picture. So the goal is someone goes further and they'll want to read the book, but they'll also want to Google more about the author and see more about their complete body of work, and hopefully go to an archive and look more about it. So I like to think of myself as like this detective, and I'm giving people clues, and they're gonna like dig deeper into their own research and make their own like connections. And writing a book is just like, you know, eating an elephant one bite at a time.
Hi. Hi, thank you for your talk. That was amazing. I'm not really sure on my question yet, but, you know, a lot of us feel like the system is bigger than us, that, you know, nothing will ever change. We have that frustration. And so my question, I guess, right now is, like, what are some strategies to help us realize, like, our place, you know, in our society right now, that we do have that change, considering that we have all this technology, these platforms, Instagram included, like, how can we best use what we have right now to influence other people to, I guess, see that we can make that difference?
Yeah.
Like, how do we empower others, I guess?
Yeah, no, I think that's a great question, because it's a question I also ask myself. And I think that does tie back into telling your own individual story, because that's what you know without having to second guess it, without self-doubt. If I could ask you what your name is and where you're from, that's the beginning of like sharing your identity with me and sharing your own lived experience and looking at it in a more micro way, where you're able to see the connections to your lives and to your life and how that connects with me. So where are you from? Do you mind me asking?
Saipan.
Okay. Yeah. And so how long have you been here?
4 years.
4 years. Okay. So I would say to that, like, I haven't been to Saipan before, but you've been here on this university campus, correct?
Yes.
So we both have been college students, and the experiences that you are having in college are formative. I would say my first 4 years between the ages of like 19 and 24 were like so transformative as me as a young person and as a college student. It's really outside of just like, you know, helping me solidify what my worldview is, it allowed me to really be able to know how I wanted to move in the world and how I wanted to navigate spaces that a lot of times felt like they were being either oppressive or they were incredibly powerful microaggressions that were happening that I was uncertain of. But this space was the way I was, like, being in college was the time I really was able to like ask and probe and have and talk to other students, like, do you feel the same way? Did that professor respond to you that way? And if so, why? Like, do you, you know, like, really getting in tune with your feelings in a way that doesn't isn't minimized, because a lot of times we discount like how we're feeling about something because it doesn't have any kind of like intellectual like power to it. I would disagree with that. I think really understanding yourself and being introspective and how you're working with others and within a community is really important, because it empowers you to go out into larger spaces and serve as a leader and say, this was my experience at this university. And because this is like it's a community within itself. It's like good practice. I don't know, but like being here and being engaged and being involved and also facing the friction and frustrations of what you're doing and talking that out in a space, I think it just simply amplifies it when you get into the quote unquote real world, you know? And it's important to practice like collective care. Like, don't think that you're doing this alone and by yourself, that you have other people that understand your worldview and appreciate you and will make you feel heard and seen in the space. Like, I was able to do that groundwork at my university at Howard because I felt other people understood my perspective and they were supportive, whether it was a professor or a friend. I knew I could go to them and they would understand. And I think that's like the beginning of it, really like telling your own story and being comfortable with yourself, and that allows you to like share your frustrations and not have to like hide them or try to assimilate or be like anyone else. Like, you can just be yourself, and that's more than enough to make an impact. You know, there's just so many things that are changing constantly too, that you don't have to be afraid of being like incorrect anymore. Like, you just have to be, in my opinion.
I wanted to follow up with
another. Yeah, sure.
That's okay. Okay, so yeah, how do you encourage people, I guess, not being in, or people are often not too scared to get into discourse with other people. And so how do you, what kind of strategies would you recommend that we can use as a university to have people come together and, you know, talk about these different opinions in ways that are conducive and not destructive?
Yeah, I'm a proponent of using art as that is the spine of that. So that's why within the, you know, my book club, we have different books that speak to different issues. So what if you have watch a film, like a documentary that helped like start that conversation, you know, visiting a cultural institution or a museum in the area where that kind of serves as the catalyst of having these conversations, and then make whatever that piece of artwork or that film or that book is launching out from there. So if I'm trying to think of an example of a book we read recently. Oh, so recently we read a book by Bridgette Davis, and it was called The World According to Fanny Davis. It was a memoir that a woman wrote about her mother, and her mother was a numbers runner in Detroit. And numbers runner, if you're unfamiliar, it was the illegal lottery. But you know, right now, like you can do the scratch off and you win the lottery. Like in the 50s and 40s, that was illegal. Right? You couldn't do that in the United States. And her mother it was almost like gambling. Her mother used to run that. And she, because she was very successful, she was a black woman doing this, it really changed the trajectory of her whole family. So they went from working class to higher middle class. It allowed this woman to go to college. And now she is a college professor and an acclaimed author, right? So this book that was a memoir simply about her mother and this illegal crime that she did in the 40s that led to her to be her daughter to have such great fortune in her life. We were looking at her mother, but we were also looking at just the construct of her life and what is illegal versus legal. We were looking at Detroit as a city and the gentrification of it, how it's changed from a space for civil rights movement in the, you know, the 60s and 70s, to a place that is actually going through a lot of economic strife right now. We were looking just at the social fabric of the African American community. We were looking at the civil rights movement. So yes, this is one book about a mother and daughter, but there were so many other storylines within that. So whatever the issue that you're hoping to bring attention to or like bring visibility to, look for those patterns, those connections that you people can connect with, because within art, I don't know what art does, but it softens people, allows people to be more empathetic and open to ideas, and they feel less defensive, they feel like they can be closer to it, and it allows for a great connection. And I would also be, I would encourage you to just be open to things that are unresolved. I think a lot of times when we're looking to make connections with people, we often want to go in there with a firm idea of what we want the other person to believe or have an opinion about. Be okay with that uncertainty and to be really open with, like, hi, you know, like, this is what I think about this, and not persuading them to think the way you think, but simply being open to having a conversation and be in discourse. And those things are the beginning of like getting to the next thing that allows for just a greater connection and empathy for others. You're welcome.
Hi, my name is Kennedy. Hi. So you mentioned earlier that something that everyone needs in order to make a change is bravery. And that's something that I struggle with personally. Like, I always have the want to make some sort of change, whether in myself or the people around me, but it's always the fear that holds me back and keeps me from doing something more, becoming something more. So I guess my question for you is, like, how did you push past that fear to get where you are today?
That's a great question. I haven't all the way pushed past it. I still feel a lot of fear around stuff all the time. And I think what getting into practice that the fear your mission and the goals that you have for your life and the vision you have for your life is much greater than your fear. Like, if you think about all the things you want to accomplish, the fear is only this big. And once you do the thing that you want to do, it's like you're liberated from it, and you can start to feel like more expansive and more open. And I really do believe in positive self-talk. So writing down quotes or reading things that are affirming to you and help you see yourself in a greater view, having people around you that can say, like, hey, like, you know, those stories that you're telling yourself, they're not true. The reality is A, B, and C. And revisiting that with consistency and making a habit of it and not falling into a trap and saying that, like, oh, I'm not good enough, or I'm not able to do these things. Like, you have to really almost like trick yourself, like, with positive affirming self-talk, because everyone has fear. Everyone has fear. That's not a new emotion. Like, we all have it. You just have to be able to move past it. And once you move past it, you just feel braver. It's a practice. It's like everything else, like public speaking or, you know, like studying for your test. Like, it's just constant practice. And the more you do it, the more comfortable you feel and the braver you feel. And I think that, like, I think you're able to do it. You asking that question, that was a sign of bravery and, like, moving past fear, you know? It's like, it's all these small things that add up to the great thing. And as long as you just believe in yourself and have those sticky notes and those things that you return to, I would also encourage you to read Audre Lorde, because she is the queen of all things. And also, there's one of the essays that I read all the time from Sister Outsider is The Uses of Anger, which is, it definitely fuels you. So back to my other point about the feelings, anger, sadness, fear, these are all motivating emotions that can lead to greater impact. Be okay to sit with your feelings and unpack them and investigate those individually and how you want it to make how you want to make a greater impact. Like, feel those things, write about them, talk about them, find ways to make connections with other people, because everyone is going through and they're fearful of something, they're angry about something, they're overjoyed about something. Connect on those levels with others.
Yeah. Questions?
Well, I will just close with what I was going to say, this last thing, that these are the questions that I was going to ask earlier, but I think would be helpful for others to just put into practice. So when you're fearful or when you're angry, ask yourself the following questions. What resources exist so I can better educate myself? Who's already doing work around this injustice? Do I have the capacity to offer concrete support and to help others? How can I be constructive? And with those, like, four simple questions, that's how I basically, when I decide to work on something that's politically motivated or otherwise, I ask myself, okay, do I have the capacity? Are there other people doing the work that I can support and help have visibility or amplify their voices? You know, can I better educate myself before I even speak on this subject? Do I need to go visit the library or go to an archive and understand the subject more before, you know, activating myself? And then most importantly, how can I be constructive? Because if you are going to enter a space, you want to be constructive. You don't want it just to be fanfare or performative. You want your work to be constructive and support others that are, you know, doing the work. And so I encourage everyone to go out and do the work within your community and within yourselves. Thank you.
Thank you all for attending today. Your time here is very much appreciated. And hopefully we will be able to also broadcast this. This, I think, on Dominican Radio will be available. So please tell your friends, colleagues, and so on to go online and be able to hear Glory's talk today.